I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, gang. Welcome to the Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Liverpool beat Manchester City. There were wins for Leicester and Watford, and another impressive result for Sheffield United. Howdy, partners. It's the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus, he's Luke, and he's Jim.
Hey, man.
Howdy, y'all.
We're back from the States, although Pete is still there.
Yeah. He could not get back through.
Yeah, I don't know why. They wouldn't let him leave. They said, no, Mr. Donaldson, we want you to stay.
Yeah, we need to learn from you. Show us your ways.
He's in P.T. Barnum Circus, travelling around.
Yeah, he decided to do a couple of days in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Yes. On his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how he goes. That's how he goes. Yeah,
and his reasoning was that he'd never been.
The best part
would
of
not expand on that.
The best part of our Pete chat is when listeners don't know if we're being serious or not. And I think this falls right into that. Yeah. So let's not give them any more information.
Exactly.
Generally, we're always being serious, though. That's the thing that's really hard to get across.
Yeah. Do you exaggerate it about Pete? No, we dumb it down, if anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there we are. We had a fantastic time in the States and Canada, of course. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we go to the Premier League. We missed the Prem while we were away.
They kept doing it, though, which felt a bit rude.
Although you can see more of it in America than you can in the UK.
You can, yeah. You can watch pretty much every game.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Liverpool beat Manchester City in the thigh rubber.
Didn't they?
The big one.
And they really beat them as well, didn't they?
Well, you say that.
Fairly resounding, I think.
But Pep Guardiola said that he was very proud of his team, one of their best displays, and they showed once again why they're champions.
Right.
I saw that, and I also enjoyed hugely the effusive praise he had for the match officials on the pitch after the game.
Yeah, thanked them vigorously. to which Jeff Shreves had to say, we've been sarcastic, or we're not. Jeff.
I don't think Jeff did have to say that. He just chose to.
Once again demonstrated his incredible lack of understanding of nuance.
Yeah.
Dreadful man.
No, but to be fair to Jeff, he's got to get the story. Yeah, that's a question.
Do we have to be fair to Jeff?
No. That's a question.
Just not?
But that's a question you would ask, I would ask.
No, not that specific question. Were you being sarcastic? That's just a wanky question.
Well, what would you have asked to get the truth out, to get a story?
Well, because it's obvious he's not being, it's clear he's being sarcastic.
But sure.
When you were being sarcastic? Can you just confirm to me that you were being sarcastic? No. Anyway, let's not make it about Jeff Shreves.
No, that's not.
Because he's done his best.
It's funny from Guardiola that, though, isn't it? Because it's sort of mind games. But it reminds me of that story about Jonathan Woodgate from many years ago where he supposedly glassed himself in a nightclub effectively threw himself out. It's sort of mind games, but why?
Was Woodgate going for mind games with that?
Well, I think
watch
so.
This.
Head games.
But like, it's just like, it doesn't really, it doesn't look great, does it? And it doesn't isn't going to help Guardiola, I think, there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you're right, though. I mean, Liverpool was straight out of the traps, of course. And they're now 9 points clear of Manchester City, 8 above Leicester and Chelsea. Worth remembering, as many have pointed out, that Liverpool did surrender a 10-point lead last season. But this season feels different.
It does. It would be very, it'd be amazing if like this season followed the exact same pattern as last season. You can't really see that.
I agree that it feels different unless you're looking at it having known what happened across the entire of last season. I mean, at this point last season, in fact, later last season, Liverpool were in better shape than they're in now. I mean, they got to the end of December and they looked absolutely unstoppable. They hadn't lost a game. They were, as you said, I think I looked at it earlier, after they beat Arsenal 5-1 at the end of December, I think they were 9 clear. I think Spurs were in second. Yeah. And they were 10 clear of City, perhaps, something like that. And they didn't get it done. So we can look at it back knowing what happened last season, but I'm fairly certain at this point last season we were saying the same thing. I'm not saying they won't win it, I'm just saying that there's a lot of football to be played.
And to their immense credit, everyone from the club is saying that as well, aren't they? Even the fans seem very cautiously optimistic, but not kind of...
Well, that's why I think it feels different, because we have the knowledge and the experience and, of course, the memory of last season. And that is vitally important in this whole thing, because last season I don't know if they've even had that kind of lead in a Premier League season. And so there was that sort of giddiness among the fans of thinking, bloody hell, this is, go on, Jürgen, say it, it's going to be our year thing. And they didn't have the experience of having a lead. Well, they have now, and obviously that went by the wayside. And I think that, again, to reiterate, one of the very impressive things that Klopp has been doing at Liverpool in the last few years is recognising a weakness or a failing and assessing it. And one of the failings of last season, even though it was a phenomenal season, was the fact that they did surrender that huge lead. And that's what I think one or two people think is different, because this time you think, right, you've done that before, and if they surrender it again...
There's an unmovable curse over the whole club.
Yeah.
Because it would be absolutely ridiculous.
When Bella Gutman cursed Benfica, did he have a word with Liverpool as well? And when they begin the Premier League...
It blew the curse across
when
to the
When they begin the Premier League in about 25 years' time or whatever it was.
Yeah. I feel that they have this idea, this Club World Cup thing is something that has to be considered as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can't really add the conversation without talking about City as well. And I guess we should come on to the game itself in a minute. But the idea that City have lost their best centre-back on the pitch and their best centre-back off the pitch this season as well means that does play a big part too.
Absolutely. They didn't look maybe as slick and as incisive as before. And I think perhaps, you know... Maybe that's fatigue setting in. You know, they are chasing their third straight title, and because Liverpool ran them so close last year, it almost doesn't feel that way. You know,
I don't think it's fatigue. I think they found themselves 2-0 down after 13 minutes in quite interesting circumstances, in a way that you can't really. Perhaps the second goal you can, but the first goal you think that's one of those things. Maybe we'll come onto the actual decision making of the referee and stuff in a minute. But they found themselves in a situation where Liverpool had two attacks, one of which possibly and probably shouldn't have stood. Yet they found themselves 2-0 down. And at Anfield, when's the last time they lost at Anfield in the league? Like 46 games ago or something?
Yeah.
So you're already scaling a ridiculous mountain. I mean, they put a stat up on Sky Sports saying that Liverpool have been two goals ahead for the last 250 games and never lost.
Yeah.
So you're scaling a ridiculous summit there. Yeah. So to say that they're fatigued, I think, is a bit unfair on City, I think.
Well, I mean, Liverpool, at home, as you say, look phenomenal. But also, Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, or Jurgen Klopp's sides in general, he does... have a good record against Guardiola, as we know.
Yeah, City's record at Anfield's terrible, isn't it? Anyway.
It is, yeah. I mean, I know Guardiola's City side have beaten Liverpool, of course. Last season, was it around sort of December, January time? Yeah. That important win.
I think they stopped Liverpool's run last season.
They might
have. First game of January, maybe, I think it was around there.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has beaten him, but Klopp sides, they find a way. I mean, because, you know, Guardiola and his team are obviously absolutely superb as well. But any team... you know, just by in the realm of possibilities can be beaten, and Klopp finds a way, doesn't he? But let's talk about that first goal then, shall we? A lot of controversy around it. Alexander-Arnold was adjudged not to have handballed the ricochet off Silva, was it?
Yes,
I think it was Silva.
It was Silva, yeah.
And then, of course, go up the other end, and eventually Fabinho lashes one in, which is a phenomenal strike. One can forget what a good strike it was.
But you say eventually, it was only 10 seconds.
Yeah, well, when I say eventually,
that's a lifetime when Liverpool are moving the ball.
I was going to say,
the thing is, it's about the phases of play. So I might be making myself out to be ridiculous here, and I'll take it on the chin if I am. But to me, it feels like if VAR hasn't given a penalty there, it still is a handball. It still literally touched his arm. Now, I was under the understanding that any handball that gives an advantage to an attacking team which leads to a goal means it has to be pulled back. And we've seen them being very, very liberal with the phases of play kind of interpretation where they say, actually, we're taking this back. I think probably longer than 10 seconds in the past to say, no, there was this in the build-up. I don't understand why this has not been pulled up in retrospect. I don't understand why it wasn't given as a penalty, by the way, given the new handball laws.
Well,
but then there's so much. I mean, I said on Twitter yesterday, there are Kafka-esque levels of bureaucracy involved in football now. No one really knows what the hell is happening.
Yeah, I mean, quite a song and dance was made about the fact that any sort of, you know, hand to ball, ball to hand contact would be a penalty. But we've seen two examples in the same game with Trent Alexander-Arnold, in fact, where that's not been the case.
Mike Crouch said, we're not going to do that. We're going to carry on implementing handball as we used to in the Premier League. So they've obviously got a little bit of latitude there. But I don't know if it's just because we're closer to it because we live in the UK and we follow the English Premier League very closely. But it doesn't seem like the teething problems we've had have occurred in Germany and Italy. And we covered it on OTC. Marcus, both. And I both did last season, and with two of the experts in that league. And there was never this kind of issue, was there, that I can remember? There were issues, but not to this level.
Yeah, I think I do remember that they have lots of injury time and stuff like that, like 98th minute equalisers and stuff. Yeah. So there must have been something. I mean, I think with this, one thing before VAR came along and all the rest of it, what was the thing everyone used to always go on about? We want the referees to be consistent. Well, VAR is more inconsistent than the bloody referees ever were.
Well, because there's a video referee as well now, so you've potentially got twice the inconsistency.
I think you've hit on something there. So there's two points. One is absolutely mad, but I'll say it because it's what's been reported and what's been alleged and what people are talking about on the internet. I'm not saying it's true, just saying it's what's been reported. And one is, I think, a fair observation that I made yesterday that you've just hit up on there. And the first one is that some people are suggesting, it has been reported, that VAR wasn't actually working properly in the first half of the game yesterday. Now, it's a conspiracy theory and all the rest of it, but the players and the managers weren't informed till half time, but Sky knew about it before kickoff, which would perhaps explain why we weren't shown the replay of Salah not being shown as offside. He was onside, apparently. They checked it so quickly. Now, if you compare that to the Sheffield United one the day before, which took about 5 minutes, it didn't look any less close than that one. I'm not saying it was wrong, but we weren't shown it. There must have been a reason why we weren't shown it. It's wrong that we're not shown it. It's wrong that they're not shown it in the stadium, but it's also wrong if we're not shown it watching, because we're the paying subscribers to the game.
Yeah.
And the second one is, just to pick up on what you said, Marcus, earlier about this kind of inconsistency. To me, what it feels like is happening is referees in the Premier League are not making 50-50 calls because they're thinking, well, VAR will sort that out for me. And then VAR are using this very, very high bar of overturning it because I don't want to undermine the referee. And what's happening is no one's doing anything. So the referee's not calling it, then VAR aren't overturning it because they don't want to undermine the referee. And what we're left with is a total, total mess.
Yeah, completely.
And Man City were affected by it, by the way.
Yeah,
that's a really key thing to remember.
Yeah, also as well, I mean, Sergio Aguero stopped playing when he was calling for that handball. Now, you shouldn't do
You
shouldn't do that. But, yeah, it's confusing the hell.
When I said they were affected by it, I meant that they didn't handle it very well, not that they were hard done by it.
Did Trent Alexander-Arnold handle
it? He handled it very well.
Did he?
Handled it very, very well. But
Henry-esque.
But if you are Man City, you have to be able to react to that. You have to know, right, this is the game we're playing against our biggest rivals. And if you get a bad decision, which can happen with or without VAR, by the way, we've seen it happen over and over again in the past. It's one of those things. It's how you react to it. I don't think they pulled themselves together anywhere near quickly enough against a devastatingly effective team. And then they found themselves 2-0 down. And then they were kind of a bit like a spoiled kind of child. They were just hard done by. They didn't want to react. They didn't want to sort of focus. Yeah. And that's what you can't do against someone like Liverpool.
Lovely second goal, Jim, though.
Sweeping stuff from
Liverpool.
Oh, just, and the header as well, just a sort of like a crouched header is a beautiful thing, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
It's a lovely finish, wasn't it?
Because there's got to be a sort of, there's a little zone that your legs and your knees can't reach.
Yes.
But that, you know, is below your head. It's like, that is such a hard thing to pull off.
It's like a sort of a side bicycle territory.
Yeah, but, you know, quicker with
it
your head.
It bounced up quick. But, you know, I think another thing that's to bear in mind with the game and the result is that I thought that City were kind of decent enough value. They had more shots.
Guardiola
was very good.
I think Aguero had another terrible day at the office at Anfield, which seems to happen over and over again.
He's not been that great in the last couple of games. But then, of course, because he is so flipping good, if he goes two or three games without maybe scoring or whatever it is, then we go hang on.
And the final player to, I think, focus attention on is Sterling, who every single time plays against Liverpool tries way too hard and ends up just tying himself up in knots because he gets really affected by it. He's a fantastic player, but I think he gets really, really affected by the game when he plays against Liverpool, tries to prove people wrong, tries too hard, and the net effect is almost nil.
Especially there. I think Claudio Bravo probably should have done better for the third goal too. I think it's easy to say this, I suppose, but I think Edison would save that.
I mean, it was
and the margins were tight in this game, weren't they?
They were very tight, and it's a fair point. I mean, Bravo and goal, you would much prefer Edison, of course. That ball that came in, I wasn't sure if it was one of those crosses, because it was Henderson, I think it was, when he crossed it, got it absolutely perfectly right, or I thought to myself, could Bravo have punched that away?
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure, but either way, from Henderson's...
The dazzling footwork from Henderson might have thrown him a little bit.
That cross was one of the best crosses of the season.
Well, okay, maybe I'm being harsh to the goalkeeper.
It was one of those ones that tempts the keeper.
Yeah, perhaps I'm being harsh then. But yeah, Henderson, he's got quite a little... What was the word I'm looking for? He enjoys a little sort of a dinked foray across from the right side.
It was a foray and a dink.
I think so, Jim.
He was kind of a foray and a dink. Lovely. He was drifting a bit a few games ago. There was talk of giving him a bit of a rest, but now he's. I mean, yesterday he was fantastic.
He was indeed, yeah. But of course, in the wider context, Manchester City, they couldn't do Leicester City a favour, but Leicester City did themselves a favour by being Arsenal 2-0. Yeah. They and Chelsea are 8 points behind Liverpool.
Yeah, short to long term, they might also have done us a favour, but.
Well, of course, yes. Rodgers' men looked impressive again.
They really did.
They played some nice stuff. I mean, Arsenal weren't dreadful. This is the thing. In the context, yes, Arsenal going away to Leicester and losing, and it's not really surprising that Arsenal lost 2-0 and Leicester were the better side. For an Arsenal fan's point of view, you're thinking, this is bloody ridiculous. But in the context, that is where Arsenal are.
Yeah.
It wasn't a dreadful performance.
It's interesting, actually, the standard Arsenal held to is still of a standard that is clearly the club aren't up to at the moment for various reasons.
And it's like Man United as well.
Yeah, very much so. So I feel like a lot of the time when Arsenal have bad results this season, people say that they've been playing dreadfully. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, like, they've been calamitous at the back the whole time, although obviously sometimes that is an issue. It's dreadful really means drab and uninventive and just a bit muddled. And it was the same again, just very, just insipid, just... scared almost. I feel like Emery is a very, very unambitious manager, and he just sets Arsenal up to, it's almost for damage limitation, regardless of who the opposition is. And by every metric, he's just doing a bad job. If you look at the statistics, if you look at the results, if you look at the sight test, it's just not good at the moment.
Yeah, there was an article, I think, in The Guardian that was talking about this game. One of the little points it was making was why on earth Arsenal didn't try and tempt old Brendy Rodgers there when the time was right. Now,
well, it was considered, apparently, wasn't it?
It was considered, and who knows, maybe Rodgers turned it down, or maybe, you know, we don't know, of course.
I think David Ornstein reported that Rodgers wasn't interviewed for the job, apparently. I think that's right. I hope I'm not misquoting him now. I read the article ages ago, but I'm fairly sure that's what he said.
I mean, Unai Emery did come off the back of, what, a domestic treble, was it, at PSG? Now, I know people say, well, obviously. But still, you've got to win it.
A treble's a treble, though.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you're foreign. Even Rodgers, what he did at Celtic, was very
impressive. And is there not an element that we were, I think from memory, we were quite sympathetic towards David Moyes after the 8 months or so he spent at United, saying that it's a tough act to follow. I know it was difficult. I know they didn't. I know Arsenal didn't come off the fact that they won the league in Wenger's final season or whatever. But he was still, that's still the club that Wenger built, really, in modern terms. Yeah. So it's a tough old game.
Absolutely.
And I actually think going into the game that when I saw they picked three at the back and so they could have Ozil in midfield and have Luiz there. And you would argue that formation, Marcus, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I would argue that formation suits David Luiz and Mesut Ozil very, very well.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And so it makes sense, but at the same time, you can't, I think it's, I mean, you know, I'm not saying he's beyond reproach or whatever. Of course, he's got his own problems as a pundit, as we all have. But Graham Souness will say, and I agree with him on this, it doesn't matter what formation you play if you're not first into the, to the ball and first to the tackle.
Well,
and the rest of it. And they weren't, were they? They let football happen to them, didn't
absolutely,
they?
And that's the cautious nature of it. It's being reactive and trying to just sort of almost like sneak out without making a fuss. And it's just, that is not that's not what this squad is set up for.
It's like going to a house party just to show your face.
Yeah,
we pop our head in, we'll drop a bottle of wine.
That's right.
Yeah. We've got to get off because the babysitter's up only open till 9.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I remember saying, you know, when Emery was appointed, and I actually even when Wenger left, that
he would be the greatest manager in Arsenal's history.
Yeah, that he would go on to manage for 25 years and win us everything. But I remember saying it was probably going to have to get worse before it gets better. And actually, you know, this is
Man United
this
fans
is
still
Arsenal's
saying that,
worst.
By the way.
Well, quite.
Talk about
is Arsenal's worst start to a league since, I think, like,
is it
early 80s?
Talk about Leicester though. Leicester were good.
Yeah, they were. I mean, and there's so much dynamism in that front six, really. And what I think so brilliant about this team, obviously there's going to be comparisons with the title winning side, just because they're making so much noise, but they're completely different. This is a team that plays on the front foot. This is a team that takes the game to you. The title winning side were a reactive team that just did you on the break and did it so well no one had an answer to it. This is different. And like, It's tempting to say they're a better side. They play better football, don't they?
Because I think they probably are a better side in sort of conventional chat. I mean,
I think points wise, they're not far off where they were at this same stage.
I think they're a point
they
better
the
off.
Really?
Yeah.
And also, you have to remember that the season they won the league, there was a chance. Was there a chance for us? I don't think there was, but I mean, well, clearly there was. But as in, they didn't have the Manchester City side that we have now and the Liverpool side that we have now as well. But if Leicester City finish in the top four this season, that is a phenomenal season.
Absolutely.
And I think it's a long way to go. We have to apply the same standard to Leicester that we applied to Liverpool, so it's a long way to go, But they've scored more goals than Liverpool, conceded fewer goals than them. I think only Man City has scored more than them.
That's quite something.
I love the Brendan Rodgers swagger. And I think what we're seeing, I think, now as well from Rodgers, and I completely agree with what Jim said about the way Leicester play, what we're also seeing is a kind of a confidence in Rodgers as a manager that the time he spent up in Scotland has given him.
Yes.
Just going through it. I know Scotland's, Scotland's not the most amazing league, and everyone knows that. Not even, you know, Celtic or Rangers fans or whatever will tell you that it is. But winning is a habit, right?
Yes.
And going through and just relentlessly expecting and then delivering on titles over and over again has given him the courage of his convictions. Whereas I think when he was at Liverpool 6 or 7 years ago now, You kind of felt like they were guests at the party and they were happy to be there.
Yeah.
I know they're a massive club.
I think he did his damnedest to
he did a great job
that.
There.
Yeah, he did. No, he did. But I think he's a much more rounded coach now.
Oh, absolutely. And I think he's done well because after it didn't quite work out at Liverpool, you know, they finished second one season, didn't they? They had a real good tilt at it. But I think, you know, because of the sort of slight Brentisms and stuff, and that he then went off to Scotland, people sort of maybe thought he's had his shot at being a top tier manager, and he's probably, that's probably it now. But he's showing that actually he's still growing as a coach, he's still getting better, still has a lot to offer. And as you say about Scotland, you know, had he not left earlier, had he not left when he did, he almost certainly would have, you know, completed a treble.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so dominant.
It's the best David Bowie song. They're the third best team in the Premier League, Marcus, I think.
I completely agree. Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean,
at the moment,
the league table doesn't lie.
They're second best in the league table.
And if
so, good on them.
Yeah, very
much
so. Yeah, I think they're going to push Liverpool all the way.
That'd be great if they did. I mean, and as you've rightly said, Marcus, rightly and consistently since the start, they are on the verge of another Premier League title. Yeah, and who can begrudge them that under Brendy?
If Leicester did overturn Liverpool, if something happens where City just, you know, for whatever reason, they don't hit the heights this season. I've been on board for ages, if you listen back. That will show there is a curse on Liverpool, won't it?
Yeah. I think, and as Marcus correctly and I think fairly said, if they don't win it, he will be doing a sizable forfeit. And I think that's rightly so. That's how confident he is.
Okay. Right. Let's go all the way down to the bottom of the Premier League. Watford beat Norwich 2-0 at Norwich, their first league win in 16. Watford, they'd only kept one clean sheet away from home all year. I don't mean all season, I mean all year. So they got one there. That is damning for Norwich. Yeah, it's a great win for Watford. Let's not take anything away, but Norwich are now bottom. And, I mean, those stats as well for Watford. You know, they hadn't won. You remember when the FA Cup came along, and we always sort of joked and said, oh, it's the worst thing for them because their league form sort of dropped off. But, of course, last season they were much better. Yeah. They got hammered. They've not picked themselves up. So a much-needed win for Watford really, really was.
Yeah. The new manager bounce has finally arrived. Maybe they trampled. Pauline was in the repair shop.
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, Deulofeu was a constant threat for Watford. He scored early on, of course.
He's one of those slightly frustrating players, isn't he? Where on his day, he looks like one of the best players in the league. He looks absolutely unplayable. Mm. But
who's that?
Deulofeu.
Yeah. I think at his best, he's excellent. I felt sorry for Norwich fans in this game, purely because they probably would have gone into this game with a decent amount of hope, saying that we're at home. This team are terrible, Watford, and they have been terrible. Make no apology for saying that. And then they set themselves up and make an early error, which lets Deulofeu in. And you can't, no matter how out of form at Watford have been, you can't give a player that quality, that kind of space, and they did that. They end up being a goal down after a couple of minutes.
Yep.
Then the whole complexion of the game changes because you're at home. You think we're not winning games. We're not scoring goals. We're bottom, whatever they were. They're in the relegation zone. They're a newly promoted team. You don't want to have a disaster in the first 20 minutes. You can then sort of grow into the game. You get the crowd behind you. But the whole thing changes as soon as you make that mistake. And I know Farker he's quite a mild-mannered guy to the press, but he was fuming. You could tell he was fuming because then they're chasing the game and then they get caught out again.
And a big problem as well when you find yourself in a situation like this is this is around the point now where it feels like this might be a real slog after they've had a couple of high-point results and performances. But if your home form starts to go out the window, you really don't have much to base your attempts to stay up on. So I really hope Norwich can turn it around because they bring a lot of colour and a lot of verve to the league. But this will be a tough result for them to take.
They need some different topics, you'd say.
They perhaps do.
I think Farker's also desperate for some what he considers to be big players and experienced players in the dressing room to come back. And I think he said that a couple of them, especially defensive players, a couple of them will be back after the international break, which I think he's pinning quite a lot of his hopes on. If it doesn't change, then they're in big trouble. Well, they're in big trouble anyway.
Even though Watford had a man sent off, they couldn't make it count. But Ben Foster was excellent in goal.
Made a couple of good saves.
Ben Foster, he will do that. All right, Lukey Moore, let's have a break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Ramble on Football Ramble Daily, everybody. Ooh, Morsey, what are you saying, bruv?
I'm saying that for the first time in about 48 weeks, I'm not talking about RambleLive.com because that is done now. If you didn't come see us live, you missed out. You missed out. Yeah. It was a great night out every time, I thought. I thought we did our very, very best, and the feedback was fantastic. We had a lovely time. Thank you to everyone who came out.
Yeah.
I think we ended up selling, in total, over 7,000 tickets or something. So that's 7,000 bums on seats. Hope you guys really enjoyed it.
Thank you to each and every cheek.
Genuinely, exactly. Yeah. It was, without going into it, I think I might do a little bit of this on me Patreon blog.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've thanked the English crowds, or those who came to see us in England a lot, but those who came to see us in the two shows in New York and in Toronto and Chicago, honestly, like, bloody wonderful. Like, yeah. we would have, I'm sure we would have enjoyed it anyway, even if nobody turned up.
Yeah, but the welcome we got was fantastic.
Oh my goodness, like, genuinely, yeah, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much. And it was wonderful to meet some of you after the shows as well. Bloody wonderful.
Yeah, great. It was great. Thank you so much. Agree, echo that completely. And our Betway Forward to Score update from the lovely Tom at Betway is that the rollover carries on. It stays at £250,000 for international break. Ooh. A huge amount of people went into Sunday still alive after the Vardy goal, including us. That was Jim's choice, Jamie Vardy.
Mm-hmm.
Born out of kind of an overall depression about Arsenal, but it was right anyway. The facts are the facts, aren't they? No one had Neves as well as Pereira, so it was all over before Liverpool Man City, which was the final game. So we go again this weekend into the international break, a chance to win up to £250,000 on a free to play game with Betway. That's betway.com/4to-score for more information.
Yeah, I mean, considering how sort of bad we've been at that, it was one of our slightly better weeks, because obviously Jim got the Vardy one. I said Mane, well, he scored, which I know it means nothing, but for me, that's a slight encouragement.
But you say we've been bad. I think only one or two people in total have won it all season.
Did Pete say Jimenez?
I said Jimenez.
Oh, because he also scored.
Yeah, he did.
Not the first one. So, exactly. You know.
I think we've done all right, personally. And yeah. I'm not one to not self-deprecate, and none of us are, but I think we have done all right.
Yeah, but you
credit where it's due.
You either win or you don't.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
You win or you're nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Winning's not the only thing. No, hang on. Winning's not the main thing, it's the only thing.
Yeah. Speaking of winning, let's have some emails with Jimmy C.
Yeah, no wins.
Jim.
Well done. There we go, Jim.
Now you
can talk, mate.
Now I can talk. Sorry, Pete being away has thrown me. No wins in the emails, Marcus, because that is not how it works. But let's dive in anyway. Hello, chaps. Following on from the emails about similar names in teams, I thought I would highlight Crawley Town. Not particularly because they have players with similar names, although they do have Bez Lubala and Michael Luyambula, but they have many a double-barreled player, which as a journalist covering them does make it different. They have Ashley Nathaniel George, Jamie Sendles-White, Josh Dacre-Cogley, Reese Grego-Cox, Mason Enigboken Bloomfield, Tom Dallison Lisbon. How many other teams have that many double-barreled players? That's regards from Mark Dunford. I think that's interesting. That has got to be a bit of a nightmare for a commentator. It seems to be more a common thing, doesn't it, the double-barrel player name? So maybe we'll have an England team in future made up entirely of them.
Big friend of the Ramble, Mark Dunford as well, of course. Nice to hear from him. I did a feature on the radio about 3 or 4 months ago, maybe longer than that, which was modern footballer or 18th century MP. Because there are so many double barrels in both those things. Yeah. It's very, very difficult to tell the difference between. Maybe I'll play that again next week or something and
nice
people can have
feature.
A go.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like it. Good afternoon, Ramblers. In your recent pod, you mentioned new careers for ex-players. I just wanted to draw your attention to a random old player, Stefan Iversen, Norwegian Spurs striker in the late 90s and early noughties. I would have thought he would be retired as he played in the same Spurs team that won the League Cup in 99 as Les Ferdinand, David Ginola and Sol greatest mind Campbell, but he is in fact playing in the Norwegian 4th Division at the grand old age of 42.
That's good lad.
Richard O'Dell, living in Peru. I emailed before as I broke my Ramble mug. It's still broken. I mean, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
I mean,
did you know of any other players from that era that's still playing? That's pretty...
What I would say is he's actually 43 because it was his birthday yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Happy birthday. What a way to celebrate with another day's training. Yeah.
Might I say that the Norwegian 4th tier... it doesn't surprise me that much that a former Premier League player at the age of 43.
Fair enough.
I'm impressed by his achievement because, you know, his body is older than it once was, as the same with all of us.
He's player coach as well, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I think he's coach.
His dad was called Odd Iversen, which I just enjoyed.
That's amazing. There's also a team called Odd in Norway, isn't there? Some players, when they finish, I think you get the impression that they can't wait to finish because then they're going to not keep themselves in good nick because they can't be bothered. For example, Neil Razor Ruddock.
Yeah, or Antonio Cassano. Do you remember he was asked what he was going to do when he was going to retire? And he said, he was asked, what are you going to do when you retire? And he said, I'm going to eat everything.
Yeah. I did that before I retired. I'm still not retired.
No.
None of us are.
No.
Although it feels like it sometimes.
Indeed.
Shout out to Stefan. Great stuff.
Well done,
you know, isn't Chris Waddle still playing a bit of Sunday League, I think?
Wasn't there a point where he was playing about 5 or 6 games a week?
Yeah.
Probably more than he was as a footballer.
What, Sunday League? Is he still playing?
I think so. And Nigel Winterburn announced on Ramble Meets a few weeks ago that at the age of, I forget how old he is now, but I think he's in his 50s, he said that he still plays once at the weekend and once during the week. And he's in great nick, Nigel Winterburn. Yeah, so there you go.
Playing with Dickie Borthwick.
Yes.
For those who remember.
Any more emails, Jimbo?
One more. Hi, Ramblers. This isn't a moan about the intro to the email. We all know where that leads. However, is it me or does the jingle seem to be louder than the normal talking? I frequently have to turn the volume down when the intro is played, not because it's bad, which it isn't, but because it seems to be so much louder, especially on the you email section. Anyone else notice this? Kind regards, Michael Gallagher, 28, from Derby. Don't know why you've put your name there, Michael, but you know where this leads.
Michael.
If anything, Pete's just going to make this louder
I really hope Pete, I hope he can't download things in Milwaukee because otherwise we're all in trouble.
He's part internet.
Oh yeah, that's true. You email show at footballrambledaily.com
and now Pete is reading it out. Well done. For Michael Gallagher, I turned that up as loud as I could.
We dedicate that to you, Michael. Yeah.
Happy now?
We love you, man. Stay tuned. Okay. Now let's go to, would it be the West Midlands Derby? Wolves versus Aston Villa. I hope I've got my geography right. Otherwise, I'm going to get pelters.
Mm.
Wolves unbeaten in 7 in the Prem. They beat Aston Villa 2-1.
And this is like their 47th game of the season as well, isn't it? So they're really... really hit form at the right time.
Yeah, I think they're doing a good balancing act. We've said this about Santa, that their start to the season, we thought they might be maybe... up there in sort of 5th or 6th or something like that.
It's so weird with Wolves because them being a relatively recently promoted team,
I know,
feels like such an irrelevance in a way that I don't really remember having experienced before.
Yeah.
You know?
They've got a plan, haven't they? They've got a serious plan. I went up there
very
18 months ago and they were talking about, that's all they would talk about, this idea that they know exactly what they're doing and all the rest of it. I thought they played some great stuff against Villa. They played with like a... look, Villa aren't as good as Wolves, we know that, but it's a derby game, and so it could go either way. Wolves have come off the back of a game on Thursday night in the Europa League. And what I was impressed with was not just the fact that they won, because Aston Villa are a promoted team, but it was the intensity they played with. Mm. They played with such dynamism. They moved the ball so nicely. Adama Traore, I mean, I sent you guys a graph yesterday on WhatsApp.
Right.
I don't know if it's up to date because I didn't have a date on it. But it's a graph that says, you know, most successful dribbles per 90 minutes across Europe. He's miles ahead of everyone else. If that graph is to be believed, he's statistically the best dribbler in Europe. It's amazing.
He is like a specialised dribbler, though, isn't he? That attribute is so strong in his game, but he's added so much more to it as well. Like, I remember seeing him play for Middlesbrough. I don't know how I mixed that up against Arsenal at the Emirates, and he was making a lot of powerful runs. I think he came on, but his end product was so lacking that actually it didn't even really feel like a threat. But now it's the opposite of that. You want to get the ball away from that side of the pitch altogether.
He also went through a phase of being the guy they brought on 20 minutes to terrorise people with his pace.
Absolutely. Well, that's why it was pleasing for him to get a goal or two at Man City when they won 2-0 there. He was called up to the Spain squad.
Yeah.
But he's not a part of it. I'm not sure if he's pulled out through illness or something.
There was talk he was going to represent Mali instead.
Well, that reads well for Mali fans that he's pulled out of the Spain squad or he's turned it down. He was called up and he's not going. So whatever the reasons are.
He said it's because he's got an injury against Villa, he said.
Oh, okay.
But is there something afoot?
Well, that's it.
Because he said he was talking.
Well, like I said, people who support Mali. We'll look at that and think, ooh.
Holding on to hope.
Yes, indeed.
Villa lost a couple of players to injury, didn't they, as well? Obviously, including the goalkeeper,
They've lost their last three games, old Villa, but one of them was... Well, one's that game, and then one of the other ones was home to Liverpool, of course. It's not shocking for Villa. Although one of the best things of the weekend was Trezeguet trying to get the Villa fans to celebrate his goal when they didn't realise it sort of crossed the line. He's like, come on!
I'm not going to get many of these this season.
The goal decision system counts for you lot as well. You have to get involved.
Not that bad. We got promoted, didn't we?
Was he looking at Wolves fans at the same time? No, they're not celebrating because they don't want you to score.
I was interested in Villa's sort of somewhat unorthodox approach of not closing down one of the best players from outside the box in the league, in Ruben Neves, who scored, I think, 98 of his 100 goals from over 40 yards away.
Actually,
they didn't go anywhere near him.
Crisp strike.
Lovely goal.
Both the goals were sort of cut in from wide, weren't they? Or balls across. And that's such a potent weapon for Wolves.
Yeah, it was as crisp as a sunny winter's day in Chicago or Toronto.
It was as crisp. Aggressively cold and nowhere near as cold as it even gets. How do you do it?
It was as crisp as when you tread on a leaf.
Yeah.
And it makes that satisfying noise. Yeah, maple leaf. When we were outside the venue in Chicago, just saying hi to everyone who came along, it became rapidly clear to me that I had grossly underestimated how long I could stand outside at that time of night in that temperature.
Yeah.
And I was like, the third thing I said to people was, can we go to a bar somewhere, just anywhere that's not here?
Yeah, go anywhere indoors?
And worth reiterating as well, it's their autumn.
Mm.
So it's to the point where your trousers are cold separately from your legs, and the cold of your trousers makes your legs colder.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
because
obviously it's not warm in the UK, but due to those rain clouds, it does keep us...
it's a more temperate thing.
From the minus 20 degrees or whatever it gets.
My wife's uncle said that he was a Chicago native, and he said when the day he brought his daughter home from the hospital with the wind chill, it was minus 50.
Was that Fahrenheit? Is that Celsius?
I don't think it matters when you get to that stage.
No, that's true, yeah.
It was absolutely ridiculous, apparently. So it does get cold. We were talking about Aston Villa. It gets cold in Aston Villa as well.
In Aston Villa.
Yeah. I think that's the first weather report we've ever done.
Yeah. And hopefully the last.
Yeah, but a big win for Wolves, so well done to them. But yeah, as you say, the intensity they played with and so on.
I just thought it was really impressive Thursday night.
They're sort of growing into it, aren't they? Because they're doing well in the Europa League. And again, it's all about managing, all about that balance that Nuno Espirito Santo, which is hard to say just in a Nuno Espirito Santo. It loses something.
You sounded like Antonio Banderas then.
Yeah, did.
Nuno.
Say it again, that style.
Nuno Espirito Santo.
Yeah, something like Antonio Banderas.
I'll put it in the impressions.
Yeah.
You killed my father. Yeah. One to bring out for the next tour. after the success of the other ones, of course.
By success, you mean shoehorning in Sean Connery and Nick Hewer impressions wherever possible.
Well, people in this.
And a Beckham. You did a Beckham in as well?
I did a Beckham in there.
Brendy.
Come on. Well, you've got to do the classics. You've got to do the best ofs, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Nick Hewer, the United States and Canada audiences aren't ready for that yet.
No.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yes. So hurry up, Nick. Get yourself over there and you can add something to the Ramble Live shows in an inverted way. So there we are. I suppose drew 1-1 with Sheffield United.
Yeah.
The Blades with another impressive display on the road. They remain unbeaten away from home this season.
It's incredible.
Yeah. That is absolutely incredible.
They're up to fifth.
They have been... You would say, pound for pound and all considered, despite Liverpool's fantastic start and how well Leicester City are doing, they've been the team of the season, you would say.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I think they are among the best teams in the Premier League without the ball.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so organised.
Because with Spurs, Spurs had a lot of the ball, as you'd expect, and Sheffield United were able to deal with it fairly handily. And Spurs now... Spurs just look so average by their own standards.
Yeah. Mm.
And I understand they've raised the bar, and Pochettino's raised the bar and deserves an immense amount of credit for it. By their own standards, they are just an average team now. And and they've got big issues with players who just don't look like they want to be there.
It's funny when you say they look like an average team, because I do agree with you, but they just went away in the Champions League and won 4-0.
Yeah.
I know it was to Zvezda, or Red Star, whichever you prefer. So not the best opposition, but Red Star, didn't they beat Liverpool in the competition last year?
I think rings a bell.
2-1 or something like that. You know, but, so they're no mugs.
They are 14th in the league, though, at this point. Well, Marcus, and this reminds me of pre-Pochettino Spurs.
Yeah, no, of course, because, and that's what I'm saying. I agree with what Luke has just said there.
I think it's too measured, and I'd like you to put the boot in more, please.
I think they're crap.
They've won one Premier League game since the 14th of September.
Yeah, well, wow. It is odd what's going on there, and it does look like it's the last knockings of Pochettino at Spurs here. We see this, don't we, when a coach, even Klopp at Dortmund, I don't think they got to the cup final, I think they were beaten in his final game, but in his last season at Dortmund, they finished very low, considering how well he did there. And Pochettino, he demands a lot physically from his players and his ideas, and it just feels like the cycle of this team is done. Now, I hope for Spurs' sake, because he's been so good there and they've had such an incredible time despite not winning a trophy. I hope that's not the case, and I hope they can become a bit more reinvigorated. But I mean, you look at the display of, you know, people highlighting the fullbacks, Aurier and Ben Davis, very poor as well. You compare that to Sheffield United and the ideas, and it's funny with what Wilder's doing at Sheffield United. Obviously, when Leicester won the league, a lot of the unfancied teams in the Premier League, it gives them such encouragement and hope, not necessarily to win the league, but just to think, hang on, what can be achieved here if we spend well and we do this and
well,
that.
Wolves would be a great example.
Yes, exactly. Whereas Sheffield United, again, with the lack of resources they have and the lack of star names that they have compared to some of the other sides in there, it shows you what you can do when you drill a side where you have some, not just solid ideas, but quite creative ideas as well. And this is an English manager who's been managing in the lower leagues, who's a sort of, you know, wouldn't be described as a young man because he isn't. And so actually, if that doesn't inspire other teams and other managers as well who are coming up or are down there as well, I don't know what can. Quite
I mean, also as well, like, they've bought really well, and it in a sense that has really showcased what a good manager Chris Wilder is. You look at Lees Moussa, who's having a really, really good season. They signed him from Bournemouth. He scored 3 goals for Bournemouth in 58 appearances.
Yeah.
That looks like that's a bit of a strange signing. Mm. But he's deploying him so, so well and getting the maximum out of these players. It's so impressive.
When we talk about
Arsenal... Go on. I was going to say, I would say a similar thing about Oliver Norwood, who, when he was at... I think it was the season he was at Reading. He looked like one of the best players in the Championship. Mm. Got his move into the Premier League. Didn't really happen for him. Ends up moving on. Now he looks great. He looks at home in the Premier League. I'm not saying he's one of the best players in the Premier League, but he knows his job. He's very talented. At the age of 28, you would wonder whether he's able to learn a new trick or two. But Wilder's got a good level out of him in the Premier League. And he plays in the middle of the park, away from home, against a good Spurs team on paper.
Yeah.
And he plays well, and they get a point. These are things that the manager deserves immense amount of credit for. And this is a coach who, I think I said on Thursday or one of us said a week or two ago, he's used to his ideas working. He's not really ever found his level yet, Wilder. Yeah. Every time he moves up, he improves.
Yeah.
And for them to be fifth in the Premier League, are they fifth now?
Yes, they are.
Fifth in the middle of November. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's not that early to say. I know it's too early to say that Liverpool are going to win the Premier League. That's because those teams at the top win all the time.
Yeah.
It's not too early now to say that at the rate they're returning points and the points they've picked up against the teams they've played.
And the manner in which they're picking them.
I mean, you expect them to drop off a little bit, but you can't see three teams worse than them.
Well, okay, it looks differently to, you know, I think I've mentioned Phil Brown's Hull before.
Second half, they were a disaster, weren't they?
They were. It would be unlikely Sheffield United to drop off like that because of the way they're drilled and the way the manager is.
This is a team who have played Chelsea, they've played Liverpool, they've played Arsenal, they've played Spurs. You know, they've played one or two other games. You think, well, that is a real difficult fixture for them, particularly away from home. And they've gone places where like they've gone to Goodison. I know Everton haven't been brilliant, but they've won at Goodison Park. Yeah. They've won well. You know,
that's a huge trip for Sheffield United.
Man United at home next.
That's
going to be a great game. It's going to be a fantastic game.
They go into the international break with their tails up and thinking, do you know what? We've just come away from Spurs and actually we feel a bit hard done by. They've been superb. And mentioning Arsenal against Leicester when all said and done about tactics and so on, Arsenal, as you said, Luke, was second to the ball. Their enthusiasm. Sheffield United's energy and enthusiasm is phenomenal.
It's a huge test of Solskjaer's credentials. I know I say this a lot about United, but that's just because of the position they're in. It's a huge test of Solskjaer's credentials going up against Wilder at Bramall Lane. It's a Sunday afternoon game in a couple of weeks. It's worth watching.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah, and we've already mentioned the VAR business, so I don't think we should.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you want me to say?
Yeah. Well, this is it. This is it. Just quickly to the Championship, Michael O'Neill. Appointed Stoke City manager, but staying on as Northern Ireland manager.
Yeah, that's in a
move that reminiscent of Championship Manager 2001, 2002, where you could do that.
Very old school.
Yeah. Mm. So I like the idea that like people are saying that it's more and more intense, it's harder to be a coach these days because you've got to do so much more stuff, you've got a bigger team to look after in terms of your backroom staff. Michael O'Neill? Nah.
No.
I'll do two of them. I'll do two jobs.
I'll probably sleep when I'm dead.
Yeah.
Still living in Edinburgh, I reckon.
Is he the first man to manage two teams at the same time in two different countries to the country he lives in?
I don't know what Jürgen Klopp was... not Jürgen Klopp, Jürgen Klinsmann was doing, but yeah.
Reminiscent of Bertie Vokes.
Ah,
yeah.
When he went down and managed in Africa for a while.
Exactly, yeah. Well, Stoke won 4-2 away to Barnsley in his first... I think it was his first game in charge. Sam Klukas with a lovely double, catching the keeper out, just scored from just inside his own half, and then the other one was a rasping drive.
They're an interesting situation, Stoke.
Yeah.
It's kind of, there must be something else going on there.
I know, it's weird.
But they have lifted themselves off the bottom, haven't they?
They have, yeah. So, O'Neill. See how he gets on there.
Did you guys see that there was a record-breaking crowd of over 77,000 people at Wembley at the weekend?
Absolutely brilliant.
Sadly, England women's team lost against Germany in a Keegan-esque display.
Yeah.
Was it Keegan's England lost at home to Germany in the final game at the
1-0.
Old Wembley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Didi Harman scored a free kick.
He did. Seaman in goal, didn't get across quick enough, pissing it down with rain.
That's right, yeah.
I also want to have a quick shout out for Seattle Sounders, who beat Toronto FC 3-1 in the MLS Cup final at the weekend. I was pulling for Toronto because we were shown so much love there, but they weren't able to do the business.
Yeah, our sort of trip to Toronto, you know, we were just in and out, weren't we? We arrived on the Thursday, did the gig on the Thursday night, and then we were off Friday. Reminiscent to Jermaine Defoe in and out.
Yeah,
but Seattle Sound, there was a chap who flew in from Seattle to see us play, and so I'm very pleased for him.
Yeah,
because he was a Sounders fan.
Yeah, and well done them.
You agree, Jim?
I do. I'm slightly distracted because did you see what happened in Germany with the Frankfurt captain?
Yeah,
it's absolutely amazing. I'll link to it in the synopsis if you've not seen it. But basically, ball is going out like so far, so obviously going out, and Freiburg captain David Abraham just sort of runs after it. There's no way he's getting it. It's basically a goal kick that's been cleared out. Keeps running straight into the Freiburg manager, whose name is Christian Strike.
Yeah, we talk about him quite a lot on OTC.
Just barges him off the ball. His face is amazing as he's going down as well. I just implore you to watch it. It's the most needless red card I have ever seen.
Yeah, I'd imagine that will come up on the Continent this week.
When you talked about Jermaine Defoe in Toronto, it got me thinking about the players who have spent the shortest amount of time at a club.
David Unsworth.
How long did he spend?
An hour.
No, was it really?
No, I think it was a day.
Really?
No, genuinely, I think it was... He signed and then he went... Ah, what have I done that for?
Oh, really? Because the two things I could think of were obviously Bielsa at Lazio.
Oh, yeah.
That he was there like a couple of days or something, and he left and he got sued. Mm. And Joey Beecham back in the mid-90s, who signed for West Ham.
But he was homesick. From Watford, I think, so not even that far.
Yeah. No, it was from Oxford, wasn't it?
Oxford.
Yeah. He didn't play a single game, and he re-signed for Swindon. He went to sign for Swindon 58 days later. That was really interesting because he signed for West Ham for 1.2 million, didn't play a game, and they took a £400,000 hit for him to move to Swindon, which is...
It's mad.
Yeah. So if anyone's got any interest in that, show at footballramonday.com and let us know. But I didn't know about the Unsworth one. I'll have to look it up later.
Yeah, well, there we are. Right, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening to The Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Of course, Jules and Andy are back tomorrow on Football Ramble Daily, so get listening to them. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, once again, who came to see us live. It's been a bloody pleasure.
And if you didn't, we still love you.
This was a Stakhanov production.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.